This is Spoiler Country, a podcast about comics, movies, whatever, but mostly comics. Enjoy.
Previously on Spoiler Country.
Don't faceplant any faceplant.
All right. Welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kendrick Riggett. That's Johnny Horsley. And today on our show, The Tangent of Tangents Dos.
It's a sequel, baby.
It is a sequel.
We're back with another
one. How many times have we done a sequel?
We've done a couple. We did Investing Part 1 and Part 2.
Yeah, but that was an ongoing thing of investing. Because we kind of realized we got done. We're like, wow, we didn't really say anything in that first one.
Right. We need an episode to make this make sense.
Right. We need one to actually say how we actually go about an investing. That was actually really fun. We should actually do another one of those.
A part three. Yeah. Investing part three, the updates.
The updates. Yeah. Books that didn't pan out at all.
Right. Books we were wrong about.
Books not to invest in. There's a lot of them.
Right. Anything that's not on this list. Oh, but.
So I got two great pickups this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And a big shout out to Russ over there at Mill Geek Comics hooked me up with Amazing Spider-Man number 129. That is a grail item, folks. That is a grail item
not,
for me.
Not 121.
Not 121.
Right?
Which is another good book to get.
That's a callback to our first episode when I fucked up the numbers.
That's right. But not 121. This is 129. First appearance of the Punisher. It's a reader copy. It's in terrible shape. But I don't care.
I really don't care, man.
I own that book now. I own that book. And it's,
yeah, it's yours forever.
Yeah, it is. It'll be mine until I die because I'll never give up that book because that is seriously one of the books that I've wanted my whole life since I was a little kid. And when I was a little kid
in the
80s,
since I met you.
You couldn't find it unless you went to a convention. And my parents weren't not like your parents that were into comic books, right? My dad was the exact opposite of that. So he's not going to take me to something. And he would in 1985, that book was probably $50 to $100. You know, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And there's no way my dad would have spent that kind of money on a book for me, you know? So I had to get it myself. And by the time I'm old enough to get it and have the money to go, yeah, let's go get it, you know, I'm 43. It's expensive. I mean, right. even the condition that it's in, dude, is $400 or $500.
Yeah. No, you know?
But we did a little bartering. We did some things and I got that. But I got another one, too. I got, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I got Amazing Spider-Man 194. Which it seemed to be a Spider-Man type of day, I guess, but first appearance of Black Cat.
It's a good series. Yeah. It's a good
and that's
character.
He's in really good condition. It looks amazing. There's one little thing in the upper left corner that's kind of a little stain on the backside. Yeah. And I don't know if there's a way we can fix that.
You can restore it out.
Yeah, if there's some things we can do to restore it. But other than that, the book looks immaculate. It looks amazing. And that's a black book.
Nice.
And you know how black doesn't carry over very well.
Black crease is really easy, too.
Yeah, and it looks really good. It looks really good.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy. Thanks, Russ, again. Mill Geek Comics, check them out. They're on eBay. He does tons of stuff on eBay. You can call him. He does a lot of cool. He gets a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, he's a nice guy,
too.
Yeah,
he's a nice guy.
He's fun to talk with.
So.
Yeah, you sent me pictures while you were there, and he had two copies of Marvel Premiere 15, which is the first appearance of Iron Fist, which is a book that I want a lot.
Right, but the book that he has, they're not to your snuff. You want them to be close to as pristine as possible, and his had some tear issues and some cover issues that look torn, so you're like, yeah, I got to pass on this one.
Yeah, I don't want to, it's not that I want them pristine or perfect, I just want them not torn.
Yeah, no, I get it, man. There's nothing wrong with that. Plus, you've owned that book in the past, and you're bummed because you never should have sold it. And you're like, I never should have sold that book.
Yeah, I regret more than anything selling my Iron Fist collection because I had the entire Marvel Premiere run and 1 through 15 of the first series. And I sold it because I thought it was the right thing to do because I needed the money. But now I'm like, I mean, I can't regret it. I can't look back and, you know, I needed money at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you can regret it, but it's the same thing, right? It's like, well, I did what I had to do at the time that I did it. I mean, you know, it's all good. And
it is what it is.
And that's a book that's totally possible for you to get again. It's not out of your reach.
I'll find a copy. Yeah, I don't need to be perfect. My opinion of a book that I buy is it in a condition that I like, then I'm good. I don't need to be perfect.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I want key books, but honestly, as long as the cover's there, they're not torn up, I'm pretty much happy.
Well, and to be completely honest, the visually speaking, the difference between like an 8.5 and a 10.0, you're not going to really notice, you know?
I think an 8.5 you notice, but not a 9.0 and a 10.0.
No, I think maybe 8.5 has like,
the 8.5, you could see, yeah, you can see some spine creases or whatever. It's,
but even then, I don't care.
It, no, I don't. That's the thing. I don't care at all, man. It's just like, because that black cat is like, well, the book probably was, the book like was a red. 6.5, you know?
Yeah.
Because that stain and then some spine ticks. And then that Punisher is probably like a 2.5 or a 2.
Yeah, but who cares?
Not me. Cares? I own it, man. And I'm more than happy about it, man. I'm like, dude, that is badish. That is, those are mine, you know? And
you know, you want to know a secret? Huh. One of the reasons why one of the reasons why I got out of wanting to be a comic book retailer or somebody that buys and sells comics, like high end stuff at shows or on eBay and stuff, is because I got tired of dealing with people who would argue over 9.8 to 10.0, or arguing like, well, there's an imperfection right here on the corner, so you need to take some money off of that. And I'm like, you know what? If you want to be that anal about your comics, and if you want to, go right ahead. I don't have the patience for that. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a two-way street there, I guess, because I think Comic Book Men on AMC, for people that have watched it and they want to go in, it makes it look like every comic book store owner in the world out there likes to haggle. And most of the time, they don't.
A lot of them don't.
Which I kind of like saying, hey, man, can you give me like a little bit of a deal on this? Or, you know, can you knock something off? Because they should be getting double of what they bought it for, right? They bought it for $80. They should be selling it for about $160. And that's just, and there's more to it than just the bottom.
That's just good business.
Well, you have to think about it. There's more to the fact that they're not just buying it at $80 and selling it for $160 because you're just hearing the $80. But that's not really the true value of what they bought it for. They bought it for $80.
No.
Then they're paying people to work there. They're paying them in Washington State. They're paying them at least $12 an hour to $15 an hour to board and bag that book, look it up, manage the condition of it, place it on eBay or in their store, then to work the counter until someone actually buys it. Then paying for the rent of their brick and mortar store, paying for the electricity. By the time that's all done, you know, you probably have $100 to $120 invested into that book alone already. And you have to think of all the things that goes into them to be able to sell it for $160. It's not like, you know, I think it's different for like you and I that are just working out of our bedroom and saying, oh yeah, I bought it for this much. I'll sell it for this much. Oh, somebody wants, you know, want to give me $20 more than I paid for it, then that seems fair to me. I'm good, you know. But for a comic book store owner, they've lost money at that point.
Yeah, it's if you own a store, you're not selling your books for at least double, you're losing money on them for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting to see people's reaction, and when you watch that show, it's hard to, you know, I don't know what they pay for their books, right? And you don't know what's going into it because they're not telling you that part. It'd be kind of cool if they did tell you about that kind of stuff.
It'd be kind of cool if they explained the back end of it. Like, oh yeah, okay, you know, we paid $8 for this book. We've had the book for this long. This is the cost associated with that. So we have to sell it for $110 to break even.
Well, I've seen them when I watch them sell their stuff, especially some of their Silver Age key books, they give a really fair value.
Oh, they do.
Like,
they do.
It's like, I can't even find it for that much on eBay. Yeah, and I don't know if it's just for the show, you know, to make good show, you know, just to get somebody to buy the book and go or what.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I have to assume that they probably get, I mean, they're a prestigious store. So, I mean, a lot of people go to their store just to go to their store, you know? And they probably get collections called into them all the time because people will think of, I have comic books. Or I inherited comic books. Oh, let's call it Secret Stash. Or, you know, there's a couple of comic book places in the country that people call when they find collections, you know? And they're probably one of them.
Yeah.
And
there's,
I just imagine they get stuff for, they get good deals and stuff, but still they got to make a living and they got to make money off their stuff. And they got to pay their employees and shit.
Right. Well, they shown the one where that lady brought in her husband's comic book collection and it was so key and so good. And he had all the keys from the 60s because he bought them as they came out, like Fantastic Four number one and Justice Leagues and all the ones you could ever hope to have. And they're like, you know what? We can't buy this from you. It would not be fair for the price we'd have to pay for it. And it's worth too much. You need to do an auction for this. And they helped her set up an auction and do all that kind of stuff. That was really neat.
That's just being honest. That's being a good person, which I mean, they didn't have to do that. There's nothing told them they had to do that.
That's
you know?
That's right. That's right.
They could have just bought them for the low price and made their cash on them, you know. But it's says something about your character, especially when you know, sacrifice your profits or whatever just to make sure somebody else doesn't get screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of people. There's some famous. It's kind of funny to say it this way, but within the comic book collection community, there's a few famous investors or guys that you can buy books from. Like, I can't find it here. You know, you can go. There's a couple guys that are at every single Comic-Con across America, and they always yep. have a lot of their stuff. There's one guy. I'm not going to say any names because I don't. You know what I mean? It's not appropriate.
Right, right, no need to.
But. Right. There's one guy that I've talked to quite a few people that most of the time they don't like him. They don't like the way he acts with his books.
I know exactly.
And
what
then
you're
there's some
about.
there's one guy that I know that loves him, but they're but the rest everybody else kind of thinks of them the same way.
Yeah,
so it's kind of funny. So it's like, oh, okay. But you know, I think the problem is that they buy their books and they're way overpriced compared to everybody else.
Yeah, well, because that person, I'll say it off air, but. To make sure I had the right person in my head, but if it's the same person I'm thinking of, it's that person overprices everything for conventions.
Yeah,
because they know there's going to be people who will just walk in and pay it. People who aren't hip to what things cost these days, or it gives them plenty of room to work with, to haggle or to trip for trades.
Right. Here, I just sent it to you. And
Yeah, that's exactly who I thought it was.
Yeah,
I've talked with him. My dad knew him, this guy, way back in the day, back when he first, you know, started. And he's been the same way the entire time my dad knew him, the entire time that I knew him. I actually went to his booth to buy a copy of World's Best Comics, which was the before World's Finest number one, pretty much the one from the World's Fair, or after the World's Fair, I mean. And he had one. It was beat up, and it was like $800 or something like that. This is back in the early 2000s. I was like, I want it. So I saved up. It was back when I was going to buy Daredevil 1 or something else. And that was one of the five or six books I was looking into with my money that I had. And he had one, and I went to talk to him, and I was like, oh, hey, you don't see this book often at shows. And he was like, well, I see him at every show I go to because I have him. And I'm like, well, good for you, dude.
That's such a douche thing to say, man.
Yeah. And, you know, that phrase can be said, like, you know, jokingly, but it was very much said in, well, I've got it, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's no joke involved.
It was very much meant to be a show-off. Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm out.
Yeah.
I actively avoid going to his booth at shows. So
it's just unfortunate because he does get some cool stuff. And it's like, it's cool to go over there and check out what he's got, but I never buy anything from him, you know?
He was talking to my dad in Portland one time about the quality of books and how he gets the rare books. And he basically told my dad, he's like, well, if you don't have the money to buy the good stuff, you really probably just shouldn't be in the business.
Oh, my God.
And my dad was like, there's a lot of the business where people can't afford your $3,000 books, dude.
Yeah, and what about the love of the medium? And just loving the genre, it's what it is for... What it is.
What about people who want to read comics?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're only in it to make money, you're probably in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if you're using it for investment,
then you should be only purchasing like Golden Age books anyways at that point.
Yeah. Right. Don't purchase newer stuff because you're wasting your money because it's not gonna hold value.
I'm getting I have on layaway. That's the only way to put it. It really is on layaway. Eerie number 4, which is a 1953 book. Pre-comic codes, obviously.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Zombie chasing a girl down a long, twisty driveway with the haunted house-looking house on top. Classic, amazing cover. I'm excited to get it because I've never owned a book pre-comics code authority. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. So I'm very excited to get this book, and it's costing me a little bit of money. You know, it's like about $350. I'm not buying it so that I can sell it in a year or two. I'm buying it for one. I want to read it because I've never had an opportunity. I've read horror books from the 50s, like online. You know what I mean?
But to hold it,
but
in,
to
your
hold
hand
it in the hand, and I almost want to like get in my bed and put the covers on and read it with a flashlight. You know what I mean? Like a kid would have done in the 50s, you know?
Right. To experience it.
Yeah. And just kind of that whole thing. But, and I saw that at Russ's shop and I was like, I have to have this book, dude. He's like, well, it's on consignment. I said, we got to figure this out, dude.
Right.
And the guy who owns it is down in California. He was cool. He's like, yeah, man, we'll just do like a layaway thing. That's fine. I was like, sweet. Because I just don't have that kind of cash to, I mean, I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? I'd rather just plink at
it. If you can spread it out, it's easier on the wallet.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to explain about it later on.
Right.
Why, how much you spend on this? Well,
just don't ask. Just don't ask that question. Yeah. And those 50s horror books are a trip, man. When you get into read them, they're fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited to get it. I can't wait to be able to pick it up, and I'll have it in like in a month or two.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad right now. I'm getting pretty sad right now because I'm about to sell off a bunch of my older comics.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy. I'm like, you're like, I need to get a house payment. I'm like, how are you gonna do that? I'm just gonna sell some comic books. Jesus Christ, dude, right, got enough books to do that? Yeah, man. Well, more power to you.
we're trying to buy a house, yeah. Right? And we need about $10,000 to $15,000 for a down payment.
Right.
And it's just like one of those things where I have all these old comic books, and yeah, I love them to death, but they are just sitting in a box. And if I could always buy them later if I really want them back. It's just some of them have sentiment to me. I don't know if I want to sell these.
How are you going to part with the sentimental ones? What are you going to do? Are you going to write them all? Get like create a list and then go through which ones? Okay, and just hit the ones that are worth the most, or what?
I don't know yet because I have two copies of Action Comics 252, which is the first Supergirl, which is a pretty pricey book these days, and those were from my dad, so I don't necessarily want to sell them, but. That's a couple grand right there.
Well, you got to look at it this way. Your dad got those books in hopes that this something like this would be available to do. Right.
He bought these books to invest for the future to where
the reason you have them is to be able for this.
Yeah.
If you're not going to sell it to help with somebody's college dreams and funds, then buying a house and helping to do the down payment is the next logical thing that you would do. So
no, I know. And what's funny is Kaylee's trying to talk me out of it right now.
Oh, is she? Well, I mean, it depends on what you guys can do and swing and how you can swing it. So,
well, she's like, I don't ever want to be the wife that makes you sell your stuff for whatever. I'm like, you're not making me sell anything. This was my idea to raise the money. And she's like, I know. She just hates to see me sell stuff that was my dad's, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
which I get,
sell everything my dad owned if it meant that I got a house out of it though.
Exactly. And that's like you said, this is. If I had to ask my dad, say, hey, Dad, would you care if I sold your comic books for a house payment, for a house down payment? He'd say, no, absolutely. Go right ahead.
Did he or did he not sell Superman number one so that he could pay his rent?
Yeah, he did. He sold Superman 1 through 423 to pay his rent.
Well, there you go, man. That's why you got him there. That's what having hard commodities allows you to do. You don't have it liquid, but you have a hard commodity that you can turn into liquid and make that down payment. That's what it's for, man.
Yeah, I know. It just I'm an emotional guy, so I'm like, but I mean,
it doesn't mean it has to be I'm going to do it because I have book. To. You have other ones.
No, I know. So if anybody listening wants to buy a bunch of old Superman books dating back to Superman number 6, hit me up on Twitter. Watch you see how. We'll talk.
Superman number 6?
Yeah, I have Superman number 6, number 12, number 16. How am I an asshole? I have two copies of Jimmy Olsen number 1.
Oh, that's funny.
I have a complete set of Lois Lane.
Lois Lane?
Yeah, Superman's girlfriend Lois. I have a complete set.
How much that's? What do you think that's worth?
It's worth a lot because it started in the mid-50s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So yeah, it also in that series has.
I mean, but you got these books because Catwoman. Your dad was into it too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you had my dad for your dad, you'd be like, I don't have any of that shit.
right.
You might still be into comic books, but you wouldn't have any of that stuff. You'd be like, yeah, no.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm excited to. Get past this part and sell them and get the house and have a house again. Cause I mean, we sold our house a couple of years ago. We've been renting ever since. And I'm excited to own a house again. So hopefully I am accurate in what I think that I can get out of these. I mean, the ones I had stolen, I got the insurance, I did the insurance on them. It was like $9,000 for the comics got stolen out of one box. Yeah. So,
well, you write the list out, you go through it and you start with some low level ones to the point where you want to, where you got what you need, and maybe the Action Comics 252 never gets put into that pile.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully not, because I like to keep those too, because those two are pretty cool books.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
I had some guy come out buying some comics about 6 months ago here. I told him some lower stuff, you know, and he saw the Action Comics here in my case. He's like, you want to sell that one? I was like, well, make me an offer I can't refuse. He's like, well, how about $500? I was like, you're crazy.
I can refuse that one.
Yeah, I can refuse that one easily.
What would be the one you can't refuse?
For that book? Well, it grades out at like a 6.5 or between a 6 and a 6.5. Yeah. One of them does. So that's like $3,000 book value at least.
Wow. Couldn't even imagine.
So, I mean, it's, I don't know. I'll sell it when I have to sell it and hopefully my plan is to sell, like I said, my actual plan is to start with the lower stuff and sell all the stuff I don't care as much about first to see if I can raise enough money with that and just keep the ones I like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Does your sister still have a lot of comic books too?
She has all the ones my dad left her. Yeah. That's it. And some other ones. I mean, I buy her some comics every now and then. I'll buy her some Wonder Woman's here and there for her birthday and stuff.
But does she have ones, some early ones like you too, or?
The oldest ones she has is some like late 60s Justice Leagues from my dad. She didn't get any of the Golden Age stuff.
Is she into it as much as you? I mean, I know you guys did some stuff together, but she's not really into it like you are.
No, she actually has a hard time reading comic books because she's so used to reading books that when she reads a comic book, following the narrative of how the panels go, it's like she goes, it just confuses her for some reason. But she has so when my dad's collection got split up, he passed away, and then I was the one in charge of splitting it up. Him and I talked about who gets what. The only one who got anything Golden Age was myself and then my sister's son JT, who got Superboy, and which was had some Golden Age, Superboy 2, which was the earliest one week he had, which is a Golden Age book.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So oddly enough, my dad had two copies of Superboy 2. So he got one and I got one.
Nice. Oddly enough, he says.
It was nice.
Did you buy one of those Action Comics 252? Did they both come from your dad?
Both from my dad.
Nice.
And here's the kicker. He bought them back in 2002. He paid like under $200 a piece, under $200 a piece.
Yeah. Anything in the Golden Age though, man, you don't even have to look at the number. If you get a key, you get lucky, right?
Yeah.
But other than that, you don't really need to worry about it. Just pick it up. If you got something there staring in your face and you have the ability to get it, just get it.
Yeah, because Golden Age stuff, I mean, besides just being worth money, it's just fun to read it because it's such a different era.
Oh, my God. It's weird. You read it and you're just like, this is idiocy. when you read it, you're just like, how can anybody take this seriously? But then you got to realize the innocence of the time.
Yeah, it was different. Yeah. Different times.
Yeah. So you posted something kind of funny, the life and the Venom.
Oh, yeah.
So the Venom movie could be interconnected to the Life movie that came out, a year ago with Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was...
Which would actually be really cool if it is. It would actually be pretty cool if they connect them, even if they weren't meant to be connected, if they just like make it connected now.
Well, there's... That'd be pretty cool. The biggest part of it is, what's the name of the company... Like the name of the company is the same in both.
Yeah, Life something or other. And the symbiote, the symbiote or whatever is in Life is very symbiote like Venom. Right. And it would be cool if they use that movie as a backdoor way of bringing the symbiote to Earth. Because from what I read, that movie ends with Jake Gyllenhaal's character, crashing on Earth, or whatever, and the symbiote coming out of his stomach or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I want to watch it.
I haven't watched it, but when I remember watching the trailer, and the first thing I thought was, this feels like the alien symbiote from Venom.
Oh, really? I didn't think that.
That was my whole feeling when I first watched that trailer was, this feels like a Venom, like an intro to Venom or something.
Right. That's pretty interesting.
I talked to Kaylee about it back then. She's like, you're a dork. And I'm like, I know, I'm a dork.
I wonder, though.
But I mean, if so, that'd be cool.
You think it'll be cool? I mean, because you're like, awesome. This might make the Venom movie cool. And I'm like, that's what makes the Venom movie cool?
Well, no, it would make the movie cool, but the connection would be cool.
Yeah.
I just hope that they'd make the movie better. I mean, it means nothing for the Venom movie being good or bad. It just means that the buildup would be cool.
How are they going to treat the timeline?
I don't know.
That's the biggest thing, right? Is the timeline. Are they just going to talk about what happens in New York and then move on? Or are they just completely ignoring the whole thing in New York and Spider-Man?
I think if they completely ignore Spider-Man in New York and just have Eddie Brock being in San Francisco and getting the symbiote there, I think they're gonna shoot themselves in the ass pretty hard doing that. Because a lot of fans are not going to like that. And there's already a lot of fans talking about just not going, like, vote with your wallet and don't see this movie.
Yeah, but that's stupid. I mean, if you like the movie and it ends up being cool, then why do you care? I mean, I don't want them to change the hit. I'm not saying, vote with your... I'm just saying the whole vote with your wallet. I mean, if you like the movie, go fucking see it. Don't let anybody tell you not to do something like that. Go, if you want to see the movie, go see it. But that being said, if they change the whole history of Venom, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to like the movie or give it a chance. It just means that they're going to take away a very rich history that has been in play for over 30 years.
Yeah, well, and they're going to take, if they take away that connection between Venom and Spider-Man of how Venom becomes Venom, they're, the anything they try to do in the future with it is not going to be as impactful, because part of what makes Venom such a great character is how he became Venom, how the symbiote started off on Spider-Man and then went to Eddie Brock and has been trying to get, you know.
Well, all they have to do it is mention why he's moving to San Francisco. They don't have to show Spider-Man. They don't even have to do flashbacks with Spider-Man. They just have to talk about it and saying,
yeah,
you know, and leave that door open for a prequel or for Spider-Man to catch up to the point where it's where Venom is part of it. You know, that's all they have to do. So as long as they do that, they leave that door open and it'll be good, because Tom Hardy is a beast. And so when they said Tom Hardy was playing Venom, I was fully on board, dude. I was like, oh, shit, this is getting real.
Yeah, I love the idea of that. I think Tom Hardy is a great actor. I just wish that
everything.
I just wish they'd be like, okay, this we're making a Venom movie. It's in the same universe as Tom Holland, or there's a Spider-Man. You know, it's in the same Spider-Man universe, or there's a Spider-Man or something to connect you to Spider-Man. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder.
I mean, it'd be like,
because they announced that like movie when they're still doing it with Andrew Garfield, right?
Yeah, a long time ago. I mean, it'd be like them doing a Robin movie, but not mentioning Batman ever.
Or you know? Doing a Nightwing movie and not mentioning Batman.
Right. Well, you can't have, I mean, yeah, you can't have Robin without Batman. You can't have Nightwing without Batman. It just doesn't work.
Well, you could have Nightwing without Batman. But if you have the first movie and don't mention Batman or show Batman, at least in the first one, then it's like, well, you don't even understand the connection.
I mean, you can have Nightwing without Batman in it, but you can't have Nightwing without him having been Robin with Batman. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. You have to have that historical connection. Because there's a lot of people that watch these movies that never read the books, that don't understand the history that you and I are talking about. And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is fine. Because
if they love the movies, they're into it, that's totally fine. And we're just kind of nerd fanboys. So it's like, oh, yeah.
Well, it's not so much that I'm against them changing. I'm not against them changing things in the movie. Just don't change the core elements of things, you know? Keep the spirit of the original there.
Well, they did
in
Thor.
And modify it to your medium. Yeah, they changed Thor, but they kept,
That's a core element, man. That's a huge part. And they just
What do you mean?
When they made Hela the daughter of Odin.
That
completely changed the family dynamics of 50 years of writing comic books.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference, man. That's not like, oh, not a big deal. We're just going to do this, you know? And they just kind of did it nonchalantly. And I mean, the movie still kicks ass. So at the end of the day, I don't really care. But they did change a very core fundamental ideology of the book.
They did, but it's also Hela. No one would ever lump Hela in the same category of a character as Venom, though. Like, Hela does not have the same impact in the pop culture nerd world of comics as Venom does.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a given.
Nobody's cosplaying as Hela. Nobody's doing Hela fan art
before
this movie.
I bet you people now, are cosplaying this year.
You know. But look at Venom over 30 years. He's an incredibly popular character.
The first time he was on, people were like,
"Yeah,
what the fudge?"
It's different. It's different to change the core backgrounds of a secondary or a third character like Hela than it is to change something of like a primary character like Venom. It's different.
It's like changing the background of Magneto, or changing the background of Wolverine or Spider-Man, or
changing the background of that guy in the background who nobody cares about. You know, it's like, it's different. You had to. If they're a core A-list character or so many people know, then, I mean, you can't really say Wolverine, because they've changed Wolverine's origins and how he came to be like 1,000 times in the comics. So he's constantly changing how he got his powers and shit.
Yeah. They could with Venom. I mean, they can't. It's so intertwined.
He is connected to Spider-Man at the core.
Yeah. Is he Spider-Man's greatest nemesis?
In my opinion, yes, because
he's immune to spider sense. And it's weird to say that, because he's 30 years after the book premiered.
Yeah.
You know, almost 30 years. Because it was like, when did Spider-Man come out? 61? 62?
63, I think.
And that book came out in, what, 88? 89?
Yeah, something like that.
That's crazy.
I mean, it was issue 300. It was 300 issues in.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy to think about that. You know, if you think about all the arch enemies Spider-Man has, and it takes 30 years to get to the one that everybody thinks is his number one.
I think what makes him the number one too is more than just him being a good villain, is the symbiote itself started out with Spider-Man, so he sees part of himself in Venom. Yeah. You know?
Well, it was a slow burn.
Yeah, it was.
You know what I mean? Secret Wars 2, and it was 4 years later that they introduced the culmination of what happened in Secret Wars 2 with the symbiote.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Right, totally.
And I wonder, it makes you wonder, was that a planned thing.
No, it wasn't. If you read the from what I've read about Venom, they didn't know they were going to make Eddie Brock Venom when they created the alien symbiote, because Marvel was very much playing the "what do the fans want" game.
Yeah.
So they redesigned the costume, made it black. They created
people
the symbiote.
People liked that black costume, man. People, they thought they were going to get a lot of backlash, and I remember a lot of people liking
it. They got a ton of backlash, which is why they took him out of the costume.
No, dude. No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, you did this before. No. No, because I remember that a lot of people liking it. The old school people that read it in the 60s and 70s were the ones that were all up in arms. But everybody that was a teenager, which is your future people, were the ones that were loving the black costume.
Yeah, but that's not what Marvel did. They listened to the older people who were spending the money at the time.
Yeah, well, they're stupid.
The older guard, and they said, oh, they don't like the black costume. So they took them out. Moved him out, and then they started getting letters saying nobody liked it. So they had him go back into a black costume that wasn't the symbiote,
right?
Because they were playing, Marvel was playing the "what do people like" game very much. So put him in black, redesign. Oh wait, they don't like that. Take him out. Oh wait, they did like that. Put him back. Oh wait, they don't like that. Take him out. They played it back and forth for 4 years on that costume, and then eventually they took the costume. And they introduced Eddie Brock in Amazing Spider-Man 299. What?
Oh my god! I just killed a big ass spider with my laptop.
Oh god!
It was fucking huge, dude.
Well then,
I don't even want to lift the laptop right now until I get. I'll be back.
All right.
Oh my god!
Man, you should have let a bitch. You could have become Spider-Man.
Oh shit, dude! You there?
I said you should have let a bitch. You could have become Spider-Man.
Oh my god, dude! That was a big old fuck, dude. I'm not scared. I don't get scared of spiders so much, you know.
Right.
That fucking thing was huge, dude. It was like bigger.
Well, it picked good timing.
Than a 50. Yeah. Right? That thing was bigger than a 50 cent piece.
It's a big spider, man.
Dude, it was. And it comes running from Stella's pen, right? And it just comes straight at me, dude. Coming on the floor, coming right. I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, shit. It was so huge, and it was just coming
at me. Come at me, bro.
Yeah, dude, it was coming right at me. And I'm like, it's going right for my chair, dude, that I'm sitting in. And I was like, oh, my God. And I just took my laptop and dropped it right on it. I'm like, oh, God, no. And I just dropped it right on it. I was like, oh, shit. And then I didn't want to lift the laptop because I was like, what if it's still alive? It's going to be pissed. And I'm like pushing the laptop down. And then I went and put my shoes on just in case. You know what I mean? And then took the laptop, and I was like, oh, thank God. And then had to go pick it up with the paper towel. That thing was
nice.
Nuts. Okay. You know what, dude? Instead of us just talking bullshit, because this is an interesting topic when it comes to Spider-Man. Spider-Man is probably Marvel's most, through time, is probably their most important character they ever created.
Oh, it is. It's the most profitable character,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. And so I want to get it right. You know what I mean? I think we should do an episode where we talk about the evolution of Spider-Man, starting with Ditko and Kirby and ending at least in 1990. And I'd actually prefer to go all the way up. I don't really care about to today, because I don't think anything, you know, actually we should go all the way up to Miles Morales. Because because I didn't know anything about Miles Morales until you told me about him. I only heard that, you know, oh, they made a
black Spider-Man.
Well, I didn't know he was black.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know he was black. I thought he was Latin.
Oh, he's both. He's half.
Okay, whatever.
He's half black, half Latin. Let you know.
And I just took it to the fact that they just made him. They just diversity for diversity, as opposed to just making a cool character. You know, and that's what my problem is. Right. It's like, why you can't call him Spider-Man? But I didn't know the story behind the whole thing. Right?
Yeah.
And so I think it'd be interesting to go and do some research and start from the 1960s all the way up to at least to Miles Morales. And then in between there, we can actually talk about the costume changes and everything. Because I remember as being a kid, and because I was 11 when they did Secret Wars 2. And
84.
And I read those. Yeah, but it finished when I was like 11. And so like 85, right? When it finished,
I don't know. It started in 84 when the black costume debuted in 84.
Okay, well there you go. So I was 10, 11, somewhere, whatever. I was probably 11 when I read it. Put it that way. I never owned Secret Wars 2. I probably, but
yeah,
you know, I just think.
Well, it wasn't in 2. It was Secret Wars 1. It was the first Secret Wars.
Oh, wasn't the first one? Okay.
Yeah, the second one was with the Beyonder, and it didn't sell very well. The first one was the one that was with the costume.
Oh, I thought it was the second one.
Nope.
Are you positive?
It was issue 8 of Secret Wars.
Are you looking at it right now?
I can look it up if you want me to, but I've owned that book 1,000 times.
When did the, I guess, it'd just be the first appearance of...
Secret Wars 8.
Oh, well, there you go. I always thought it was Secret Wars 2. So anyways, nope. and then it debuted in Amazing Spider-Man in issue 252.
Yeah.
Right? And then...
Which actually came out, I think, the same month as Secret Wars 2.
Well, there you go.
Or Secret Wars 8, I mean.
Yeah, so there you go. And I've owned that copy multiple times. That's a great key book to have, actually. Amazing Spider-Man 252, because they recreate a classic cover, but with the black costume instead.
Well, they recreate Spider-Man number one.
Spider-Man number one? Okay. I wanted to make sure that it was...
Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. And so it's a classic cover. It's cool looking, and it holds its value very well. It's a great homage.
Great.
Because they're both the correct way to say it.
Yeah. So what happened? I agree. Yeah, we should table it and go back. I mean, I have a bunch of information on the black costume that I could talk about, but we can table it for this episode. Come back to it on a Spider-Man episode where we have, you know, a lot of time to go into it. Which is fine. That's a good idea.
Yeah, because it's cool. It's cool. I mean, there's a lot of different things for it. I just remember being when I was a teenager, everybody loving the black costume, and it was only the guys that were in their 30s and 40s that were all like, "Oh, it should be black and or red and blue," and it was just like, "Yeah, okay." But you know,
well, I mean, what happened? I don't know. Do you want me to tell you what happened now?
Yeah, real quick. We're gonna go back and do it again, anyways.
Right. So what happened was they announced they were gonna change. There's rumors that the costume was gonna be changed. Right. It was supposed to happen all in Secret Wars 8. But because the books got delayed in time, printing time, Amazing Spider-Man 252, which actually is technically in the storyline, takes place after Secret Wars 8, but was published 5 months before Secret Wars 8.
Yeah.
That's why the costume appears first in Amazing Spider-Man and then later in Secret Wars, which tells the origin of the costume.
Oh, wait, I didn't realize that. So
yeah.
Spider-Man 252 comes out before Secret Wars.
Yeah, by like 5 months.
Whoa!
Yeah, so... There was rumors saying Spider-Man is getting a new costume before anybody ever saw it. Marvel started getting letters saying, "Don't change the costume. Don't change the costume. Keep it the classic." From a ton of people, to where they're like, they started working on a reason. Okay, now we have to finish our storylines with the costume, and then we need a reason why Peter doesn't want the costume on. But then by the time they got to working in the why it's an alien symbiote, why they're going to take the costume off. People started writing in letters saying, no, we love the black costume. It's awesome. Yeah. So then they got the symbiote off of Peter, and then Black Cat, so they had Black Cat make him a black costume. So
we're both
Then they had him come off, and then they wanted to bring the costume back, and a new character called, and then Todd McFarlane brought, you know, created Venom in issue 300, and created Eddie Brock in issue 298, 299.
There you go. So yeah, we got to have that. We got to, you know, we'll plan this out. We'll do a full, and really, Spider-Man is such an epic character, and I love Spider-Man.
I love him too. He's one of my favorites. Yeah,
he deserves his own episode, anyways.
He deserves his own month,
really.
we could do a month on Spider-Man if we wanted to. He's easy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just such a cool character. So there you go. I'll get emotional about it if I keep talking about him.
Right. All right. So we'll plan a Spider-Man episode here pretty soon. We'll do it pretty soon, so we don't have too much time between this and that.
Yeah, that'll force us to do the research.
Right. Because people are going to hear us talking about it now, and they're going to say, no, you guys said you were going to do one. Where's the dad?
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll get that done.
So that's cool. So the Venom movie, to wrap it back around.
Looks like shit.
I think it looks cool. I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to watch it.
It looks like your generic... I mean, it's just a teaser, and that's fine. I get it.
I feel like you're setting yourself up to not like it already before you even see it.
I probably am. You're probably right, but I still feel like
even as just Batman a teaser versus Superman.
But even as just a teaser, that trailer, it just feels extremely generic. So I really want to hold judgment. I mean, I know I just said it looks like shit, but I really want to hold full judgment of anything of how I feel about this movie until I see an actual trailer.
I wish we could take
know more about
the podcast into the theater and talk about it while we're watching it.
Dude, that'd be awesome. We can just call up and I'm like, hey, can we do an after hours showing where we just podcast while we're watching the movie? I mean, is that cool?
Yeah. I bet you they'd freak out about the audio though.
Yeah, because we can't record the audio of the movie.
Yeah. Be cool though.
Well, that'd be awesome.
We could
let's call some theaters. Sneak it in.
Well, we use lapel mics.
They'll never know. Like, shut up. Why are you guys talking back there? We're on a podcast right now.
We did that interview with Mike Grell on a lapel mic connected to my phone.
Yeah, and it worked great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did all the interviews at in San Francisco on those lapel mics.
On the phone?
Yeah, I'm on my phone. Yeah, actually, I had to... So I lost the lapel mics that we used in San Francisco or in San Diego. So while I was in San Francisco, I had to order them and had them delivered to my hotel.
Oh my God.
So I could use them for the con there because I wanted to do some interviews.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
We have some good stuff coming up. We're going to do some, we actually got some episodes we're doing research on, like both of us, like real research.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think our next episode that's going to come out is going to be an interview with somebody we both like.
Yeah, we've already said it like a million times.
Yeah, but it's next.
This is true. This is true. We had we had it set for Saturday. We had a reschedule, which is fine. Somebody like this guy coming on, we'll reschedule a million times if he needs it.
And I'll let you say his name because I can't pronounce it.
Well, there's a few different ways that has been on the internet, right? Because when I read it, it was J.M. DeMatteis or DeMatteis. That's how I said it in my head.
Right.
And then I could have sworn I watched an interview where he said you could say it DeMatteis, but the actual pronunciation is DeMatteis, but either way is fine for him.
We should ask him on the show.
Yeah, we're definitely going to ask him. I'm going to say DeMatteis because I'm pretty sure that's how he said it. And, right. You know.
I mean, we asked Scott Godlewski of Copperhead how to do his name, too.
Yeah, because I thought it was Scott Godlewski.
Right.
Because, and he goes, no, the W is actually silent.
Right.
Which I've never, ever seen a W be silent before.
Now you have.
Yeah, right? It's kind of weird. It's like, why is that W silent? Well, get out of here, W.
Yeah, get out of the name. Just get out of there. You don't need to be there.
But I'm excited.
We got that coming up.
Because this makes
it's gonna be fun.
This makes sense to go over Spider-Man.
Yeah.
After talking, because we can ask a lot of questions about Spider-Man with DeMatteis. Because he wrote Kraven's Last Hunt, widely considered the best story ever told with Spider-Man.
And it's not even a Spider-Man story. It's a Kraven story.
It is a Kraven story, but it's, you know...
You know what sucks about the industry today, and it's something I don't like? That story would never be in the main Spider-Man storyline today.
No, why is that?
They would make that a miniseries because it's not a Spider-Man-centric story. It's a Kraven story. Kraven's Last Hunt would be published as a miniseries outside of the main continuity, or even in continuity, but outside the main storylines, and it would be published as a graphic novel or something. They would not do it in the actual storylines now because nowadays it's all... I don't know. I feel like they don't take the risk like that where they'll take a 9-issue story or whatever, set their main character as actually the secondary character and tell a story. You know, it's all about this bigger world, these bigger issue crossing events happening, not a tight story within itself. Even though I know Kraven's Last Hunt crossed over the different Spider-Man titles, which makes sense. You know,
but it was all contained within the Spider-Man universe,
exactly.
I guess you could say.
But it's very much not a Spider-Man story, you know? It's a Kraven story with Spider-Man, which is what makes it so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I can just imagine back then if you were reading Spider-Man stories, just going through them, and all of a sudden you have this, a new story starts, and it's that. And it's just cool, you know? It's something different.
And we can ask DeMatteis what he felt about the costume. And was he happy they're all against with the black costume? Or if he really wanted the classic costume?
Yeah, because he wouldn't have had at that time, he wouldn't have had a choice.
See, for me... I was 10, 11 years old when I started reading Spider-Man with the black costume. And so my first foray of reading Spider-Man and getting into Spider-Man, he was already in the black costume.
Yeah, well, it's like me with Green Lantern and Flash. My introduction to Green Lantern and Flash was Wally West and Kyle Rayner, not Hal Jordan and Barry Allen.
Oh.
So I grew up thinking Flash was Wally West and Hal Jordan was gone and it was Kyle Rayner. Those were my... Green Lantern and Flash is going up because those were the ones that were in the comic books and on the TV, on the cartoons for 20 years.
Yeah, I hated it. When they brought back the red and blue for Spider-Man, I hated it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did. I absolutely hated it. I knew that wasn't... When I got a little older, then it was like, okay, it's cool. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But my reaction was what people's reaction was when they changed it to the black. I was like, I don't like this at all. I loved the black costume. I thought it was so cool looking.
It is cool. It's
sleek,
very cool.
And it's like, you know, and he just looked badass and they could do cool things in the shadows and, you know, it just.
The visuals were awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm excited though that, I mean, not excited, but I was happy from a story point standpoint that they took it the way they did because then we got Venom and we got Carnage and we got Toxin and Anti-Venom and stuff.
Now I look back at the costume and it's just so iconic, the red and the blue.
Yeah.
And the little webbing and the armpits and everything. It's just different, you know?
Yeah.
So I like it.
I like it too. All right, we should probably stop, or we're going to keep talking about Spider-Man on this episode.
All right.
Tangent two, all Spider-Man.
Yeah. The tangent of tangents two, Spider-Man tangent.
Right. Well, essentially, this whole thing's been a Spider-Man tangent. Oh. Besides the spider you murdered.
Yeah. Oh God. I'm leaving. Somebody, whoever edits, leaves that in.
Yeah, it's saying it's
at least part of it in. That thing was huge, dude. That was scary, man, coming right at me, dude. Like that was the stuff of nightmares, dude. It was so big. It was like, a wolf spider.
You should get a picture of it.
No, it's dead. It's gone. It's in the trash.
No,
good. I was good, like, whoa. I don't even remember what I must have sounded like a little girl. Oh my God.
No, it sounded like you. I thought you spilled water on your laptop because you were like, "Oh shit! Oh god! Oh god!" And like you got really quiet away from the microphone, and I was like, "What the fuck just happened? Did you just get murdered?"
All right, man, that is a show.
That's a show.
We're gonna
man.
Get
we
out of here. Don't forget, you can check us out on TuneIn and Stitcher and iHeartRadio now, and Spotify and iTunes. And you know what? Just look us up. Any podcatcher you use on your phone, just look up Spoiler Country and we'll be there.
Yeah. We throw it out. The podcatcher catches
it. That's right. Yep. We just set them up.
You can talk to us
on
Twitter. You can talk to us you can email us at spoilercountry@gmail.com. You can check out our website at spoilercountrypod.com. You can hit us up on Instagram, on Facebook. Just search for Spoiler Country in either one of those platforms. You'll find us there. As always.
I'm still getting a shiver from that spider.
Right. As always, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. It's fun to do this.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. We're out of here. Don't forget, expand your mind and read more.
See ya.